Okay. Do you remember anything, like when you got your draft notice, or?
Well, I was really, got my draft notice in December '42.
Okay. And when did you go into basic training?
I've been, about a week after I was inducted, I guess. After 17th, which is maybe about 24th or so, February, March '43.
Okay. And is there anything you remember about that in particular, or?
No, I don't know if outstanding points about it. It's, I don't know. When I went to Battle Creek from there, Fort Custer, and the guys I was with, I all knew we got separated up there. And from that time on, I never, one knew it very long at all, changing uniforms. But getting all reacquainted all over again, every time I moved. Even when I went to prison camp and stuff like that, I got separated from all the guys I knew.
Did you feel your training, like your basic training, did you think it was adequate?
Oh yeah, it was rough. It toughened me right down right away, quick. You really saw it when you get down to basic training. Then the one thing I got down there in Camp Bunker, North Carolina, the first night down there, I was in a concentration camp, and it was mud deep. It was cold too, the building grew up off the ground, you know, and the wind was blowing through me underneath there. It was pretty chilly.
Now this is?
Camp Butler, North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. After that, it got better after that. I put about 10 months down there, I guess, in North Carolina for when I received. When I received January 20th, 44. It was 25 days. Was Levi Woodbury, Leadership, in North Africa, went through the Straits of Gibraltar. I quickly missed that. And went through it real late in the morning, and somebody hollered, "I'm going through the Straits of Gibraltar." By the time I got up on deck, I had to look back to see it. But then I went to, didn't stay in North Africa too long. I went to Italy, and put me on the Anzio beachhead. I stayed there then, we fought our way out of there to Rome. And after Rome, they took us back down to south of Salerno and got us ready to make the invasion of southern France, which was August 15th, 44. From that time on, we just go. About Thanksgiving time, they finally pulled us off the front lines. But it was on the front like that, like an anvil pushing France. We got to take a shower about once every 3 or 4 months. I always kept my extra set of underclothes and I'd get a helmet full of water someplace and wash up a little bit once in a while. And when I was in Germany for Christmas in 44, but then we had to pull back and come on the boat, we had to pull back 20 miles. So we put infantry behind us and cut us off. And shortly after that, then January 20th, 45, I got captured there. It's the year to the day that I left the States. And I was in prison camp for 90 days after that. Prisoner started at about 75 pounds in 3 months. And it was full of lice. My back was all sore. Lice was chewing on you all night, all day long. It was full of lice. And they kept their officers after the British 8th Army liberated us. They finally flew us back into Oxford, England, Canadian pilot brought us back. They put us in 91st General Hospital. I took a shower. Then wasted bites, you get like a scab about ready to heat up. You only come off of burnt brown a bit. So they pop off and get bigger each time. Mucus under there. Get bigger all the time. That's made my whole power of my back is all sore like beef steak. And I took a shower. I got in the hospital at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I took a shower right away. Put clean out and find pajamas on. road. And I was in the back off of me and the ward there, where it was a, had tents pitched, but they had a 4-foot wall and a wooden floor in there. And they had beds in there, all four in there, spring mattress, looked real nice to me over the sheets. I jumped in there and went to sleep. Seemed like I was going to in bed and sleeping in somebody hollered chow, and I said, boy, ain't missing no GI chow, because I was hungry. And I went up to the mess hall and got me a tray like that full of food, and I went to sit down, I couldn't sit down. And I set the tray down, I was driving it, down here finally driving my back, and boom, I jerked it loose, sit down there. But then I got done eating, I went back to the tent there, off the main ward, and the ward part was up. Went out the other door and I said, hey, wait a minute. Wait, I got down. I said, what can you do? Got anything to do with my back here? Oh, Jesus Christ, Jesus. Come on over to the main ward, a nurse here. Each ward had a nurse head of it. He said, come on over, see the nurse. So I went over there and she says, oh, dirty. She hadn't stripped down the way. She said, dirty. And she bandaged me all the way down with gauze and soft drug to my waistline. Then she'd go across. Excuse me, across the hall, she's a ward boy, I guess she rested the way down there. So I looked like a mummy when I got down there. I was wrapping gauze from the head right down to my ankles. But that's all it took, and she made me come in the main ward, and she kept tracking me for UFOs for about 2 days, I think. That was all right then. Got to start eating, drinking, I was doing all right.
Okay.
So I was better then. 4th of June, left Southampton. In the States, it took us 8 days before I was glad to get home. Looked good to see old USA again. But on a Sunday, that ocean was just as smooth as that table. And boy, we'll make a good time. We'll be at early tomorrow, Monday, you know. I woke up next morning, a ship with a rock, and I heard that fog when I got out of midship, and I couldn't see the bow, I couldn't see the stern of the ship. It was so foggy, and waves from over the side, and oh no, we won't make it today, but we can make it on Monday. It was late in the afternoon, but we made it. We went to Kilmore, and from Kilmore we spent one night there. Then we got on a train at noon from Kilmore, it was 12. And there was two guys from Detroit who sat in a train with me. Woke up the next morning and said, well, we're out of continental limits of the United States. I just have a feeling. How do you know? I said, I know, I just got a feeling. Pretty soon went to a little town, I said, Ontario, and the license plate in Canada. They got to cross in Buffalo during the night, brought us back in this Michigan here up to Fort Huron. And went down through the night from the shade and spent one night there. Gives a good pit. That's recuperation loop, they call it. That's 60 days. You come home through Sheridan and stay at home for 60 days and wound up, got married. And then I went back, of course, the war was over then. So. Went to Miami Beach, from Miami Beach up to Tacoma, Washington. Now, that's a long ride train from Miami Beach to Tacoma, Washington. Then I worked a puke train home once in October, and then November I was discharged. I was in there.
What led to your capture?
Well, it was another outfit that wouldn't take the ground, and so they threw us in, and we wasn't up to strength, no way. And they surrounded us, had us surrounded for 5 days. Up on a hill, and they called in the SS troopers on us. We finally gave up because we couldn't get out of there. There was no way of getting out up on top of that hill. So I felt cheap that day. I felt like I didn't deserve to wear that uniform. But that was then from then on. And the SS troopers were good to us. They, turned us over to the regular German army, then it was bad, you know.
Oh?
Yeah, it was real bad. SS troopers, it was real good to us.
I thought, we read a book on World War II, yeah. Like the European theater, and that's they seem to seemed to make it out like the SS guys were real fanatics and stuff.
They were, yeah, they were, but these were the combat SS troopers that got us. They were all guys from 18 to 21 years old, and they were men too, I'll tell you. They told us they'd walked 35 miles that day, about half a mile.
Mm-hmm.
They were real men, I'll tell you. Of course, you had the other one, SS troopers, but they weren't like the combat SS troopers. They were really good. Now, seeing it, the funniest part, after I got back to their headquarters when they captured us, there was an officer come on, I don't know what rank he held, but he started telling us, they're putting us on coaches, train, ship us back to Limburg, Germany. And he said, then we'll be done with you. You'll be done with SS troopers. And going back to Germany to take the army and take care of you. But the funniest part of it was, he spoke English, but he learned his English in England. And he had the English broke and German broke together. I put her laugh as to talk. I don't know if you ever heard of two English speak or not, but oh, they break, chop the words up something awful. You know. And that and a German broke for it, so it finally they all get out. But the way we looked at us, we used the same show they did, the only thing I threw in my canteen cup away, of course I never carried a mess kit because we always had kid rations most of the time. My canteen cup was in my belt back there at my canteen. And of course you're supposed to throw the steel helmet all the way, center cylinder, you know, belt, copy's belt, all that's supposed to do, that's all considered arms.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't throw my helmet away. I kept it. It's fine, I threw it away for me, but when you got back to eat, the SS troops, because they were German, they were done most on soup. Of course, my grandmother, which I grew up with, she was German. She used to make something like a noodle soup, but she called it griddle soup. And they made these SS troops. It was really good. But they managed to shoot their steel helmet. Yeah. Can you imagine how their steel helmet has been painted? Then I'd wash it, rather than shave it, just rinse it out and throw it out. Oh boy, I shaved it. Put that in there, and that griddle soup was really good, and I liked it, you know, but trying to get the aftertaste of paint and aftertaste of soap. Oh, what a taste. I finally went up throw it away. I just couldn't do it. It was a shame to waste it because it was so good. That was the only thing, but it only gave us something decent to eat out of, but I kept my canteen cup for it. It would have been good, but it didn't work out that way.
During your fighting and such, did you have adequate, in the winter, did you guys have adequate clothing and such?
We slept outside the year round, so it didn't bother.
Uh-huh.
We used to be outside, we slept outside all the time. So first you got an angel, of course, green and went away. We found a hole and got in it. It was in during the rainy season. We woke up in the morning and lay in water about that deep. And then they moved us, the next night, same damn thing happened. They found a hole, and a guy got in there and woke up with the water that deep. He had to take off his shoes and dump the water out. They stayed wet for 2 years. There were 2 weeks in for it, finally got it out. Because they had no change of clothes. That part I didn't like too well. I wanted to be dry. Once I dry it out and get under the roots, I knew how to get around. It takes a while to learn all that stuff. Work the hard way. But as far as sleeping outside, it didn't bother me. We used to sleep outside. And one time we stayed in the house. For some reason or other, I took my clothes off, and that's something you don't do. I took my clothes off in the house. All I had was shorts on and a sleeping bag. And we had to stand, somebody had to be on the telephone 24 hours a day in case somebody called. I was next to the last on the telephone. After the guy relieved me, I went back and got my sleeping bag and I zipped it up, you know. Well, I had my shorts on. Then the guy started getting up, come on, get up, get up, get up. No, I didn't want to get up yet. And one come and grabbed that zipper. And the other one grabbed my feet and he took me outside. And he walked way across from about here in bushes or farther and threw me a snowbag. And then the left me there, and the best part was, it was a man, his wife, and they had two daughters, and they were huge, 6 foot, big husky women, girls, both of them. And they come out of the porch watching it, see what I was going to do there in that snowbank. It was in French. And no more when they get back in there, I got to do that myself. So the zipper was made to flip it like that and just throw it open real quick. Because it was a mummy sleeping bag like that. So I threw that open, I got to hold that thing, and I come out of that sleeping bag and crossed there barefoot, but sure, some two girls standing on the porch and they're just laughing. Well, they didn't bother me running around barefoot there for what looks like there, because I was used to being outside. And they were great, them goddamn guys. forget all their names. Most of the guys I knew had some sort of a nickname to call them, you know, shorten their name or something. Never knew the full names, most of them. Yeah.
Did you learn the nicknames of most of the guys, or did some come and go so fast that, like, replacements that you never really...
Well, it wasn't too bad. Our guns, our 81 mortars, were in a range of 2 miles. So the guys and the guns were usually back quite a ways. I was up on the front where it's directing the fire. Radio operator, more or less. One guy got captured, and his name is Albert Tebow. He was from New Bedford, Massachusetts. And he could speak French, but it was Canadian French he spoke. He couldn't talk in French over there. Well, there were different ones like that. I remember some of them. I remember a platoon sergeant, Ronnie Ashman. He was from Lyman Junction, Colorado. And we had a lieutenant in charge of the platoon there. His name was John Pease. I've got some literature to in there or something to see where he passed away. He lives in Des Moines, Iowa. And I had another guy, he's from Atlanta, Georgia. I think it was Atlanta. No, Macon, Georgia. I couldn't figure out how he got in the service, because his grandfather owned the railroad. His dad was running the railroad at the time he was drafted, and I suppose after he come out of service, well, he was out there. Charles McWaters III. He said he had a colored ballot from the time he was born. His ballot was just a little bit younger than he was.
What was he had then?
A colored ballot.
I don't know what that is.
A servant waited on him.
Oh, ballot.
Laid out his clothes, shred, and all that stuff.
Jeez. How did he even get out of it then?
It's a wonder he didn't get out, but he didn't. He wound up in a prison camp too, George did.
Huh.
Yeah, it was George. I think it was George. Charles McWaters III. Things are forgetting all
that. What was, how were the citizens there? You stayed in the house, you said?
Oh, we just slept on the floor in the house. I didn't like sleeping on the floor. I'd go to sleep on the ground. The floors are too hard. You know, it's one of the places of condemnation has gone through hips to set everybody to sleep in it. In fact, a long time after coming to sleep, I lay down the yard around here and put the good way on it down there. Yeah, I was up there and I was in the hospital enough a couple of years ago back or so, and they questionnaired me and they said, I know about, I was in a prison camp, what they provide for warmth and stuff. I said, we don't need it. We used to be outside, we didn't need it once. Our clothes took care of that, our bodies was used to it. But they couldn't handle them lights, that was too much. Went down there, but like I say, I figured out about 25 pounds a month I lost. 3 months, 75 pounds of the skin and bones. I met a Canadian doctor to the fences before we got liberated there. He wanted to know where the front lines were at, and I got captured. I was telling him, how long have you been here? He says, come June, it'll be 4 years. As a man, he was captured in Africa. That's before he was even in the World War II. And he says...
So he was held that long?
Or? Yeah, he said, come June, it'll been made 4 years for him, because he was liberated in April.
Oh my God.
I said, how'd you stand it? Well, he says, it was good those guys got captured earlier like that. He says, last three or four months ago, boy, they were mean as heck to you guys. They were.
Was that part of it, you think, because so many people that they didn't have the supplies, or?
Well, they had the supplies, because you just get prisoner of war pay, you're supposed to get one a week. So they didn't, we only had, I think, three of them while I was in there, and they split up, first it was six guys, and they split up one package for eight guys. Well, you can imagine old jar of jail about that high, you get just a taste, you know, splitting up these ways. But they always come from Argentina and the United States of prisoner of war factories.
Hmm.
So the box usually about so high. One day I think of it once in a while, I used to get a pay ration. One was packed by Cracker Jacks, Chicago, Illinois, the other was packed by Rabble Dog Food, Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Which one was better?
Same. It was no different than this day I knew where they come. Rival Dog Food, Chattanooga, Tennessee.
That was funny.
Used to get a breakfast restaurant around here, chopped ham and eggs, a little can about that high, about the way around, and it opened a key all the way around right to the center, you know. And once in a while, you take that top off, one part of it off, and drop it on the floor and down, and pick up, scrape it all the night, and throw it on that clean piece of bacon, eat it. Then the dinner ration, the key ration, had cheese that made in the Green Bay, Wisconsin. It always got good things. That was really good cheese. And then I forget what the breakfast supper ration had. We always got three boxes a day. One was breakfast, dinner, and supper.
Hmm.
There's always a little fig bar there, about that square, about that long. Boy, does that keep you regular.
Did you guys usually have clean water to drink?
Oh, yeah, they weren't supposed to drink anything only that they had they put in water to purify it.
Chlorinated,
do you think? Yeah, they would drink chlorinated water.
Okay.
I carry two canteens or something, because I didn't want to go without water.
That's, I read, what was, they talked in a book we read about diphtheria.
I know what you're thinking. Maybe diphtheria. You used to give us a pill every so often, but I can't think of it.
So you didn't really suffer from that?
No, because they give us a pill every so often. It was more or less a tropic disease, but they always give us a pill anyway. I did wind up in the printing camp. I got yellow jaundice. I turned just as yellow as butter. My urine was just as red could be. I asked, they had a British, they had a man set up in the medical room. They gave me some sulfur drug, I think it was. And that must have saved my life. I think it would have killed me, that yellow jaundice.
Did you see many guys? What, trench foot stuff?
No. Well, there might have been some, but they always went back to medics right away, quick, so you didn't see them. I seen one guy with shell shock when he was on Anvil fighting out, and that was a sorrowful sight, I'll tell you. Shell shock.
And what's that exactly?
They just shake, and everybody's got a shell, and they go, and they're just scared all to death. Well, it happened to me. We got shelled by our own artillery one time. I couldn't get to my radios to stop them. They'd been out targeting, and I started to throw some shells, and I and the guy with me, he dove in a hole, and I threw my radio down as far as near that stove by the hole. If I could have got my radio, I could have stopped them. They just shelled a little hay. Well, I was that way, too. There's more here. Shell come, I'd be running. I didn't know why I was running. I knew I was way up high, because I used to tell them where they, how high and how far we were going to land at. And after that, I finally broke myself a little bit. Let me run, didn't know I was running. But it was rough getting shelled by the old artillery. They fired all three guns at one time, or four, was it? Four, I guess. And before them shells landed, they had their guns loaded again ready to fire. They just keep coming like that. hit one of them goddamn pine trees about that big around, and it's probably could have gone. Hit me here and went right in my jacket pocket. Couldn't get out of there, I was backed up against the side of that hole. I couldn't get out of there, and the guy was in there, you're gonna get up and get it. I said, dude, keep your head down and get it blown off, but they quit shelling. So when they quit shelling, he got up, threw that damn tree right off, and he got, oh my God, all that strength out of the way. He shoot it, pull it out, I couldn't pull it out of the pocket, threw it over the side. And I got a hold of that radio, and I started shooting somebody. I couldn't get back to the artillery, but I could reach a guy up on a hill ahead and relay the message. So in order to get my thing across, I got him mad at me. So he would be getting mad when he relayed my message.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a comfortable feeling. You get down by your own, shelled by your own.
Oh yeah, it was rough. But I wouldn't know the only people, but I kept that radio. I just said, checked out, shut it down, and threw it down the gun and drew it for the hole. If I'd only kept that dang radio, I could have stopped them. But then the artillery party was up there, they couldn't get their radio. In fact, their radio got blew up. Shell Hill was blew it all up. Mine was all right. Oh, there's so many things. Every hour there was something different going on. We were up on a hill there one night, dressed out, and we got a counterattack. And there was a German laying out there a ways, and he was moaning and groaning. The sergeant of the rifle company said, "Well, I do something about him." A little short Mexican guy, he couldn't carry it through his top. An M1 rifle carried upside down was raining. Well, he couldn't do that because he was so short. The muscle would drag him. So we walked out there and put that bullet, pow, shot him in the head and killed him.
Yeah.
He'd come back and the sergeant said, "What'd you do that for?" He says, "You know, like you pointed the rifle at him." Yeah. You just can't understand how some of the guys like the eye company. The goddamn guys, they just couldn't wrestle. They had a leisure day, they had a strip of gun battle. And it was gun battle, and it was all right. I called them bloodthirsty all the time. Damn guys, they just couldn't take a nice, easy day and let it on take it easy when you had one. Oh, they had strips on.
What group was it that did this?
Eye Company.
Eye Company?
Mm-hmm. It was LQ and the M and I, and the M Company, all in one battalion. There's four companies in a battalion. Well, after we pulled back from the straight lines out after the bulge there, we sat there waiting to move forward. And the officer they had in charge of that I Company, he'd been up in our platoon, but they transferred him over there. So he got a call from up on the front, back to where he was at, the CP. So the guy said, "Well, we got tired of sitting around here, so we went on a patrol." About six of us, five or six of us. The officer said, "Well, did you see anything?" "Yeah." He said, "You seen a German patrol?" He said, "What, why did it happen?" Well, he said, "There was one guy, German sentry, so we figured there was some more around." So we just sat there and waited. We said, "What'd you do with him? Did you capture him or just leave him go by?" He said, "No, they're still there yet." He says, "We waited till the whole got there. There was six of them. We shot all six of them." But God dang, I had to come here. I'm telling you, it was something else. They were good guys. All they just couldn't leave, be peaceful a little bit, screw up a fight somewhere along the line. And I knew I knew them by sight, but never knew any of their names. Like they had one officer who was down in, goodness, was down in Italy. They got, well, I guess that's the one that transferred over to the rifle company then. And he couldn't pick up that Italian language, but he wasn't in France no time. He was speaking like a native. I got no words, of course, and stuff like that. Because I know a lot of German because my grandmother was German. She used a lot of German words and I remember them, but don't speak it.
Were you able to go any, like, any of the cities? Little leaves and such?
I got into Rome. I always wanted to get to Rome, Paris, and Berlin, but I never got to Paris or Berlin. I got to Rome. That Vatican's pretty, I'll tell you. I'm working St. Peter's Cathedral. And I had a steel helmet, my carbine in my hand, and I walked in. Jesus, that's beautiful. And I gripped that steel helmet and slung my carbine on my shoulder and took my steel helmet off. It is beautiful. St. Peter's tomb down there, although I don't know how far it's down the ground. There was a stairway going down, but I didn't go down there. They got rubies, some of that big around in that thing. It all gold. I think it was 90 feet from that tomb to that dome up over there. It was beautiful. Every step you took, you look around, all around each side. Italian people there in the room asked the Germans to pull out and leave us have a town so they would blow the place up. Didn't cut my hair. One of the hairpin, the barber shop, the little guy that run the barber shop that got shot in the arm. Coming into town off before we got there. So his wife was doing most of the cutting. He just used the hand clippers, you know. And his wife would do the rest of it. That was the first time I had a woman cut my hair. Like I say, every day there was something going on, every hour or something.
You guys come across a lot of homes and such that were abandoned and get all the food?
At one time, town we was in, people left, they had a bunch of rabbits, so we helped ourselves, had some rabbits. Cleaned everything up, the archaeologist didn't put them away. Eat their bread and eat their rabbits. I don't think they minded, they probably give them to us. The prince was awful for this. Here one day was coming just a little hamlet, real small, just very few houses. And the old French would come out, he had a bottle of wine and a glass. It was one of them miserable days, just misting rain, you know. You couldn't wear a raincoat because the raincoat you got was so tight, it swept his water with him. You just didn't wear it or anything. And he went like that and had no, and I hurt his feelings. And we had happened to stop when I was out there. Pretty soon we're out there again, I see it hurt his feeling by the expression on his face, so I took a drink. The woman came out of the house with a loaf of bread and a knife cutting off a piece of bread to give it to. It was just bad. We had started France down there in St. Maxime. Got down to the town, there was a woman, well, she was probably my age then, but I am now. She come out, she threw her arms around me and she kissed me on both cheeks, which is her tradition. And then I come along, she decorated me all with flowers all over. Tragedy, this one, the elderly woman said, we've been waiting. She could speak enough English for I didn't understand her. She could wait 5 years for her to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It was from 39 to 44. Yeah, they were real glad to see us.
How were the Christmases that you spent over there? Were you fighting the whole time, or of the troops actually stopped fighting?
It usually slowed down to a minimum. Thanksgiving and Christmas, New Year, that's... New Year's, well, we'd give them a 12 or 5. All the guns, loaded them all up. Fire and give them a welcome. It was New Year's. Like I said, Christmas of 44, we was in Germany before the boat, so we had to pull back to the boat. We had a feast, we had the kitchen up there, and had a mess hall, all the pie, we had a whole shot, and I think there was about 300 airplanes over there. Bombers heading for Germany, they bombed Germany somewhere, Christmas Day. Yeah, we can't remember that right down the line. You gotta remember bits and pieces anymore. So this is like I watched that Schindler's List. Did you watch that?
No, I haven't seen that.
I seen it. I seen it the first time I was on. I thought, well, I'm gonna see it again just to see if it's. Yeah, it was the same damn thing all over again. And I rode in a boxcar, so I know what those were. There was 90 of us in a boxcar. And the prisoner of war hill. And we laid down, those boxcars weren't that big, so we laid our heads against the outside walls around there. And we laid belly to butt. And one turnover, all 90 of us had to turn over, so probably didn't. But they were smart, they had what they called a butt, 25-gallon light can butt, that they down about that high. It was supposed to be a car, and the car works today. Well, somebody right away said, no, we can't do that. They'll be full of urine before you open it for 24 hours. So one corner and then this other corner over here, they had an opening. Well, if you see that Schindler's List, you'll see it had five wires. They only open about that. They've got a tin can each of them, and the guys with urine ain't tipping out the window. And we used that can for bowel movement. So it worked out real good for us that way. And I think about that morning, and they butt the stomach in. Well, they turned out everybody over. All 90 of them, all around the
country. How long were you in the boxcars?
I think it was in about 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They moved us from Lindbergh up to, I can't think of the name of that. It was way up north anyway, up near Hanover, Hamburg up there somewhere. Not too far, like I say. Berlin was east of us. It was a joyful day the day we was liberated, though, I'll tell you. Got them lice-infected barracks. We went and slept in the garbage shanty. We had the poles to get away from lice. And it was pretty weak, though, but I walked out in the back and go up and you hear that gray house over there, the latrine. And I come back, I lay down and sleep for 2 hours a week.
Were you injured at all?
I was hit one time and I was hit 3 times, but I only turned one time and I got hit in the shoulder back here and got the Purple Heart. I never was much for decoration from doctor turned me in for he turned me in.
Now what was the Purple Hearts were given for?
It was up on a ridge. And up there, the road down here, and over here, you can see there's a tank down there. I've seen a tanker fire the shell. We were going along this ridge, and started way over here, he kept shortening his range all the time. And I knew what he was doing. But I stayed at my feet, and finally when that last one come, I just dropped to my knees, and when I dropped my knees, that something hit me back here. And it stuck right in my clothes, burn, oh, that burned. The guy was looking at me, I said, take that out of there. You got a hook. He said, I can't, it's too hot. I said, put your glove on, get it out of there. It's burning me. So he put the glove on, turned out. He said, you better go back to the rear. So they're calling the radio for relief. And I was going back to the rear. Of course, everybody knew my voice on that radio. You know, I know how it was, how bad I got hit, and all this stuff and that. Lieutenant says, you better go back to the aid station. So I went back to the aid station. Doctor bandaged it up and turned me in for Purple Heart. Would you like to see it? Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him.
How big?
Thank you. put the pin here?
That's for your belt.
Uh-huh, okay.
That's my bronze star.
And are the purple hearts are for what, like courage or?
For being wounded.
Oh, being wounded? Okay. And what's the bronze star?
Oh, that's for being in action. I got that not too long ago. It's an old watch I wore through the service. I don't even know what's in here. Oh, that's prisoner of war one. Forgot I even had it.
Yes, I've never seen one of those.
Purple Heart?
Yeah.
Well, when the guys got killed, they tell me they had their names to be engraved on there, and send them home to the folks that got killed. The name of the bat. I sat at home, never told my mother what I was for. She like went wild. Something bad had happened. But she, when I was over in Albany, or down telegraph, this guy got killed in service. And she went over to ask him about it. She said that he had got killed, so he didn't have his name in the back.
She checked the back of yours, huh?
No, there wasn't one on mine. Oh, the PFC at that time, that should come with it. I don't have to study this stuff to know what it's all about anymore.
My grandpa got drafted, but he never ended up going overseas.
Oh.
He went to do basic, and that's about it.
Well, there's some that way and some weren't. Like there's some guys, where the hell are stuck in it? some guys, guy I knew was Milton Krieger's name. He went to service, never got a furlough. Never come home, got there with a discharge. Nothing. He went overseas and everything.
He never, now what's, the furlough is what?
Oh, just give you, get 30 days of, how is it, 30 days every 6 months? Or,
oh, okay.
Or 30 days every year, I guess it is. He never got to come home in time of furlough. That's what they call a leave of absence.
Okay. Is that like an ID or something, the military?
This year, yeah, it was, but I got a discharge and another one. No, this, I just got, I don't have to go through this stuff to tell you what anymore.
Did you ever use anything, like anything of the GI Bill?
No, I never used it. I wish I had. Bud Haddox, I don't know if you knew him or not, he wanted me to go on a GI Bill and take flying lessons. And at that time they said, if you use the GI Bill, well, you wouldn't get as much federal bonus. Well, I never got the federal bonus either. I should have used it.
Oh, that's...
Okay. I got a state bonus, after the discharge, I never got a federal bonus.
Is that the bonus that the government said and all the marchers went to Washington? That's the same?
That was World War I went to Washington.
Oh, okay.
They wanted that federal bonus, but we never got that federal bonus. They got a bonus from the state of Michigan. I mean, the federal. Hmm. I think my discharge in there. Did you see that, Frank?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a picture of 19 years old there.
You want to get enough?
Good thing.
Is there any difference? Did they have the same?
Yeah, this one's got beneficiary on it. See, that's, when I went overseas, they always give me a different one without the beneficiary on it.
Now, were you issued these in basic or something?
These basic training, yeah. My younger son had them. I didn't know what happened. One of the beneficiary got the mother to be mother. Mm-hmm. I never noticed that. I just said, oh, they got MS on them. It's used quite a bit now.
What's the key for?
Well, I don't know what's happening. My wife gave her that Christopher, St. Christopher medal for a Christmas present in 43. I carried that with me all the way overseas and back.
What are the, do you know what any of the letters stand for?
What, the T?
There's like T43 and a B.
That's Texas. B is a blood type.
Oh.
C is a religion.
Okay.
The service only at that time, I don't know if they do now, but at that time was they only recognized Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish. The only three religions they recognized.
Hmm. In case they have to give you your last rites.
Yeah. Seems funny though. I wonder what these guys that run the different religions, how they wound up, because they only recognize the three, Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish. So anytime you see them out, forget to see somebody else's dog tags, that I'm fairly new, just to check and see if there's a C or a P or a J out there.
Okay. Huh. So the dog tags, they left. Somebody died in the service, they left one with them and what, sent one back to...
They tell me with GRS, which is grave registration guys, they take them apart, put one of them out and the other was sent back to the States.
Okay.
Hmm. I wouldn't want that job to pick up that dead wish.
No.
Some in pretty bad shape.
I bet. He's picking out pieces probably.
Yeah, that happened too. Yeah, I never wore this plastic. They made us use that white string when it was in service. I knew we had to take it washing or something. But it had to be kept apart like that. Okay, so I put this plastic one on after they come home.
Oh, that just so they don't make noise?
Yeah, a lot of guys used to take a gas mask hose and didn't use it, so they cut it off. They cut one of the rings off, put it on the dog tags, it wouldn't rattle at all.
Oh, okay.
I never wore mine around the neck, though. I always swore them out, looked in my belt, and shoved in my pocket.
Right. What were your, you said you got hit in the shoulder once, and what were your other two injuries that you
had? Shot one across my nose like that. And they said, well, when you get a drop of blood out, they give you a Purple Heart. I said, no. And then the other one, oh, I was sleeping. About 10 after 2 in the morning, that dang wristwatch. I looked at it and said, 10 after 2 in the morning, I heard that shell and the one hit me right here in the leg. Little baby bugger, man, it chewed the covers and blankets all up. Looked like a mouse and made a hole about like that, going chewed everything all up. Stung and burned like the devil, you know. But I didn't feel a bug or a pepper, I was back to sleep.
Now, was that just shrapnel or a bullet?
That was shrapnel.
Okay.
All shrapnel.
You have to dig it out in the morning?
No, it was in the fatigue pants, the pocket on the side. That's where it stayed in that pocket.
Oh,
I
can't
remember why. Oh, little baby bugger.
Okay.
It sure did a lot of chewing. It looked like a mouse about that big a chew in there. Blanket, so. You realize it was spinning and twirling and doing all the jiggy jiggy like that, and it chews everything up like that coming through. It did.
What were the shells, was it lydite? Was that stuff? What were the shells? I was reading in the book we had about some shells that they would use that would explode, and it was a chemical that would burn your skin and burn through your clothes and everything.
No, we didn't have any phosphorus. We had some of them, but we never used them. As long as they never used no gas, we never used any. Then we were the one who wanted to use gas, but we were the one who used it. We had that white phosphorus smoke we used for different times, you know, to cover up something so they couldn't see it. They thought it was gas at first, but then they found out it wasn't.
Did you, you have do any river crossings, or?
Oh, yeah. Didn't make a difference, this one. Didn't worry about water. Well, I never hit no big waters to go across. Well, I got another thing I can show you, might be some interest to you.
They examining your teeth.
They were?
That's what I heard.
Why they shook the bodies back? Did you find them? That would be, that'd have to be more horrible job. Did you ever see that Saving Private Ryan?
This is a history of the 45th Infantry Division. In Sicily, Naples, Rome, Southern France, Rhode Island, Central Europe. I pretty got my picture taken. I suppose I can't find it now.
Did a lot of the different divisions have?
Yeah.
Histories like that? Well,
probably so.
Mm-hmm. You guys always happy to see the airplane?
Well, not too much, it wasn't too bad. I don't know any of them Red Cross nurses there. I knew some of them. I can't find it. It was crossing the Moselle River anyway. The guy was taking pictures. I took pictures and it looked good. Yeah. I went over to see the replacements. They went over in June of 43, I think, and that outfit was over.
So you...
I didn't join them until 1st of March 44.
Did you ever get to drive a tank?
No. I didn't want to be around tanks. They'd draw too much fire. Stay with that. and the guys down there, that night they wouldn't sleep and everything. They'd go off someplace and dig a hole too.
Really?
They'd wave them tanks, they'd draw two wish fire. Like a magnet. Everybody shooting at them.
That'd be pretty scary.
You don't sleep outside of it.
Yeah, that's what they did, yeah. I seen one in North Carolina, I guess it was. He had a dang monkey in that tank. He'd go up the antenna on the tank, you know, the shell come up, boom, down he'd go back to the tank.
A monkey, huh?
You hear that shell, yeah.
That's bad.
One of our engineers picked up a pup down in Italy. Called it 88. That's a German shot at artillery, 88. And him, that dog 88, well, she grew up about that high, and she ran a fender than 6x6. And he was going through the Alps in France there. She was running a fender in convoy, and she fell off. And they stopped the whole convoy and called for a doctor to come forward. 88 got hurt. She was the homeless dog. I only see her that one time before she was homeless. But she's right on that front fender, that 6x6.
Did the doctor save 88?
I guess so. We kind of started moving on it. I don't think she got hurt all that bad because we wasn't really going that fast. That was quite an experience going through them mountains and mountain people in there. Well, it was all this first spending, all this thing with rice and tomatoes and little grapes and everything. They was trying to throw that stuff on his truck with Jesus loaded with his cover, smashed up tomatoes and grapes. And then they hold their hands up, pat your hands, man, they sting it over boy in the truck. Bow! They were just glad to see us.
Mm-hmm. You're eating good then, huh?
Yep. Come across one of the guys sat in the back of the Jeep and was going to shoot some water. I'll tell you who they are when they come to them. One is Joel Spath, the other one is McKenzie. Called him Mac all the time. He was from the East, and Joel Spath was from Colorado. He worked at a dude ranch out there in Colorado. Mm-hmm. I was standing around the bank watching the guy take his picture.
Did you see many duds?
Duds,
German, yeah. Duds?
There was up in France and the guy fell in a hole. I mean, he was coming to town in Italy there. He said there was a shell come right in his hole. Well, not sure all his blankets and everything, never exploded. He said they did it here in France once too. I said, get the hell out of here. I said, won't you run me now? In a hole with me. Tears probably go off.
Do you have a hard time digging in the winter?
I never do too much digging.
No?
Like that. I'd find something, some hole someplace to crawl in. tractor kind of get hit in the leg as well on the side of the log.
Did you ever have any bombs dropped from aircraft then?
No. Dude, I like this kind of weather. I said, then food starts up there, right? Outside of holes, and it's shell, it's bet where the shell is gonna last at. Bust that. Go over there, I said, no, I suppose that's over here, 3, 4, 5 hundred yards, whatever the destiny is. There's no power, look, there'll be an airburst. Bust and bust.
Now, what's the airburst? Send stuff down on you?
Yeah, it's dropping it come down. It's another thing, I never like to be in the woods either with a shell. Did you ever know where the shell was going to hit a tree when I was open? I could tell how high it was up, how far it was going to go just by listening. Well, I just kept my ears on covered. But in the woods area, you couldn't tell because it might be low enough to hit a tree and then bust right there and hit that tree. Mm-hmm. But out in the open, I knew.